Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton Lee Cantor here with you. You getting excited about our road gig, huh?
I am. After the show, we are on the road heading to the Business Writers Conference in Blairsville and with our friends Jack Phillips, and that's going to be happening over the next 2-3 days.
Broadcasting live from that conference, going to visit with a lot of authors and specialist consultants with expertise in helping authors get their proposals together and get published from the big houses.
Yep.
But nothing compared to what we're going to do today. This is going to be a fun segment.
This is where the magic happens.
Absolutely. A little bit later in the program today, we are going to get a chance to visit with a gentleman with Century 21 Meridian Realty, Mr. Sean Saylor. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the president, the grand poobah, the lady that makes it all happen at a company called Brandware. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Jennifer Jones Mitchell. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Well, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Now, Brandware has been around for a while, but you're kind of a recent addition as president?
Yes, I just joined the agency June 1st.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Can you share a little bit about Brandware? What are they up to?
Sure. We're really kind of redefining our direction right now. We're building out more of our digital group. Mm-hmm. And Brandware is part of Brandware Group. So we have PR and we also have a research agency as well.
So market research?
Yes, market research.
Is that where the company started in that area, or they started PR first?
They both started together, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yes, because one informs the other.
Right.
The more you understand your customer and those needs, the more informed your strategy is going to be. But we've seen quite a few things happening lately in the industry. We've seen a return, obviously, to content and more of a collaborative relationship with the client.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook Live, for example, Periscope,
right.
All of these live means of communicating and telling your story. I think we're going to see more collaboration with clients on that as they have more town halls and live Q&As, things like that. So we're working with clients on that.
So now the client is actually the content creator, like you're using their words and knowledge.
Exactly. It used to be that we would kind of
do it on their behalf. Right.
We'd write their blog posts and infographics,
right.
And we need their involvement more. So we're developing more programs around that. We're also seeing a lot more interest in crisis communications right now.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many ways that you can get in trouble. Obviously, product recall, hackers.
Right.
But
or just
behavior,
an employee, right?
Yes, bad behavior caught on film, exactly.
Right.
It's just so easy. You can have somebody chewing out a waitress or saying
right,
the wrong
and someone
things.
Has got a camera or phone and,
exactly.
And all of a sudden that's now trending on Twitter.
Right, and you have to be prepared to know how to address it. So we're getting a lot of those kinds of requests from clients.
So the process of coming into a firm like this at such an executive level,
mm-hmm.
what is that like? Do you get the phone call and then you come in and really talk it through and they ask you about vision and philosophy
yes.
and values or?
Absolutely. All of it.
It's
yeah.
never happened to me is why I'm asking.
Yeah. A lot of it is about, you know, where do we want to go in the future? What's happening in the industry right now? There's so much happening with virtual reality and augmented reality. Mm. We're seeing it with Pokemon Go. We're seeing it with so many clients where you have that opportunity, not just to tell your story, but to engage your customer in that story. So that was a big discussion that I had in the early interview stage of wanting to say, where, what are your views? What are this agency currently
You're vetting
doing?
Them as much or more than they're
Absolutely,
vetting you.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I want to work with a company that wants to do what's next, not just what's now.
So now, how did you... Were you aware of Brandware before? Like, how'd you get involved with them?
A recruiter actually contacted me. So I was certainly aware of them, but yeah, a recruiter
what were you
reached
doing?
Out. Most recently, I was running my own consultancy.
Uh-huh.
But prior to that, I've worked at pretty much all the global PR agencies.
So you can't keep
town.
A job either.
I like to go where the action is,
right.
You know?
So this is the first time that you ran? A firm of this size?
Yes, as far as being in this role. So it's very exciting right now.
Now, what are some of the challenges of being kind of first time in this kind of a position?
I think the biggest thing is wanting to make sure that as I implement new changes, we don't dilute the existing culture, because right. what this agency has been very successful for almost 20 years. So I don't want to come in and change things
just
that don't
fix
need,
everything, right?
Right. Fix what doesn't right. need to be fixed. So it's wanting to make sure that the changes we make are smart. They're going to serve the clients. They're going to keep us fresh with what's happening in the industry, but also leveraging the talent that we have and making sure that the culture remains.
So you're doing kind of a listening tour, right?
Yes,
now?
That's what I've been doing really for the first month. I just was kind of talking to everybody, clients as well.
Too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Finding out what are we doing right? Where can we improve? Finding out their views on kind of where they see their own categories going, mm-hmm. and then making sure that we're leveraging that in the best way.
So I would think in those first few days, especially, wouldn't their guard be up? I mean, you've really got to be careful about how you conduct yourself and the tone that you set in those first few days, don't you?
Absolutely. But that's where listening comes in. I mean, as long as they know, the staff, the clients, everybody knows that I don't want to change for change's sake. I want to, hear what they want, where they see. We're a smaller agency, so everyone has the opportunity to kind of create their own path and define their role based on what they want to do and where they see the industry's going. So I wanted to make sure that was clear and have those discussions with everybody.
Now, are you seeing that the clients are, since they're so much more well-informed than maybe historically they mm-hmm. had been, are they kind of driving some of this? Like, are they the ones saying, hey, what's this virtual reality stuff? Or, my kid loves Pokemon Go. Are they kind of driving some of that as well?
It depends on the client. I mean, for the most part, they already have their hands full with a million other things.
Right.
So they kind of do look to us to keep them forward focused in that area. You mentioned Pokemon Go. I think that in virtual reality, these are the waves of the future. I mean, if you are in the hospitality industry and you're launching a new hotel, you used to just put photos up. Well, right. now you can let people actually walk through.
Right. Now you get a 360. Yeah.
Exactly.
Put on your Google Cardboard and,
exactly.
and you're in the hotel, right?
Yes.
In the lobby.
But you want to also make sure you're not just employing technology for technology's
right.
sake.
That's one of the traps too. They read an article in Fast Company and they're like, why don't we do this too? And all of a sudden it's kind of a rabbit hole they got themselves into.
Right. So you got to make sure there's a strategy behind it. There's a reason for doing it and mm-hmm. a value to your customer.
Right.
Now, do you have a sweet spot? Are you finding that Brandware has a sweet spot in terms of industry or sector?
Well, Brandware, when we first launched, the agency was focused on automotive, and clients still to this day include Ferrari and a lot of automotive clients, a lot of aftermarket products as well. But we have branched out. Ashton Woods, one of the nation's largest home builders,
yeah.
is a client. Husqvarna, lawn and yard equipment. So I think it's less about the category and more about the tactics and your ability to leverage the right tactics for the right storytelling.
So what's your favorite part so far?
Oh, gosh. Working with the team. We really have a crackerjack team that I've never seen people who care so much about the work. And that just, really makes every day great.
So now when you're working with a large, especially a luxury automotive company like Ferrari, mm-hmm. are you going to Italy and you're getting immersed in their business?
Absolutely. That's critical.
Yes.
That's,
I mean,
every
I would
time
think that
I
that would be
chance.
Mandatory, right? You have to really get to know them.
Absolutely. Yes. Whenever we have a chance and it's cost effective, you bet.
And are there some things that they're doing to embrace the technology that's innovative? Just because they're innovators in their space, do you almost have to do things that are innovative?
Oh, absolutely. All of our clients are. I mean, it's about making sure that
it's
value,
a right fit.
Yes, and that strategy is there, because otherwise you're just doing it because it's a bell and whistle and that's never going to get you anywhere.
Well, can you share what it's like when there's a new engagement? You have somebody that engages with Brandware. Maybe you can kind of lean on some of your past experience as well. Mm-hmm. What's that first meeting like, or whether you're kind of getting to know if it is a right fit for each of you?
The main focus is, what problem do they need to solve? Do they need to better differentiate from competitors? Are they just unknown? Are they launching new products?
Or,
is there a crisis? Do they need to be prepared?
So it usually comes in some, it's more of kind of a project-oriented introduction?
We do have some projects, yes. But it is better when you have an agency that kind of fully owns
a holistic relationship.
You
rather
can
than,
touch all the pieces and make sure there's a cohesion in the message.
Now, are your clients ones that have typically had relationships with PR firms, or they maybe had relationship with a marketing or advertising firm and never had PR? Or
it's a mixed bag. We have some clients that have never worked with PR or had any kind of agency at all. So there's a lot more kind of education of how to work with us and what we can do and when to bring us in. And some just kind of change agencies every few years.
Now, how do you educate a customer or a potential client that had worked with maybe a marketing company or an advertising an advertising company, as opposed to the difference between PR? In my mind, I see PR better suited to the social media world because it's a conversation and a dialogue you're trying to create with the customer instead of maybe persuading them, where that's where the advertising mind typically goes.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I started out in PR in the mid 90s and social media.
And it's exactly the same.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, no change. No, social media has absolutely changed it in such a way that I remember when Facebook opened up in 2006, I wrote a bylined article for PR Week saying that marketing, PR, advertising are going to have to start
coming
merging
together. Right?
I got hate mail. When I said
really?
That, yes, because there was such a separation of church and state and the disciplines.
Right.
But now they're really not. Agencies do need a PR agency that understands how to fully integrate everything we do.
So the sales and marketing thing, how does that work for a PR firm? Are you out there shaking the bushes? You got to kind of eat your own cooking when it comes to promoting. Speak to that, the sales and marketing side of your world for you.
For me, in terms of how
brandware.
Yeah.
I think, a lot of it is demonstrating that thought leadership, making sure that clients know kind of what categories we play in, not categories in terms of business, but in terms of services, and really demonstrating the need. Once I started reaching out to colleges and talking about the potential crises that they can encounter, everything from violence on campus to protests to hacking, things like that, you start having those conversations and more people in that industry start reaching out and wanting to know what you can do to better prepare them or get their message out.
So trust must be incredibly important.
Absolutely.
I mean, the relationship, and I'm trusting you with my brand.
Yes.
I mean, that's probably super.
Brand is in their name.
Yes.
I know, but this, I mean, can you imagine? Because you got to tell them the truth.
Yes,
what you know to be the truth to even establish that foundation. But the trust that these companies are placing in you guys, that's a miss. So the relationship just got to be rock solid.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you hit it on the head. We're representing their brand. So they have to trust that we know what we're doing, that we're going to say what we're going to do. But also with reporters, because we've talked a lot about digital, but still media relations plays a major role in what we do. You never can mislead or lie to a reporter. You have to have that trust factor as well, because they have to know and believe and trust that when you speak for the brand, they can trust what you're saying. So trust is the biggest part of what we do, whether it's with the clients, reporters, even employees. You know, we have to make sure that we are clear in what we're saying and doing, and we do it right.
Now, how do you manage the expectations of clients that are like, okay, now I've hired this PR firm, so I'd like to be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. How long is that going to take? Like, is that a week? Is that a month? You know?
Yeah, well, first of all, it depends on the client.
Sometimes and in a good way. I want it to be in a good way, because I know in a bad way, it could be tomorrow.
Exactly. A lot of it is about managing expectations. It is about talking through what are the story angles, identifying those stories that we know will work. We maintain such great relationships with reporters, so we know what they're going to be interested in and what they're not. So it's all about kind of packaging that story to make sure it does hit. But you do have to, going back to trust, be honest with your clients. And I have no problem saying, listen, that's not likely to happen.
Right. This isn't advertising.
Yes.
You know, we can't pay to be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. We'll do everything we can to make it happen. We'll keep you apprised of every step of the way, but we can't guarantee it.
So you touched on this phrase earlier. I'd like to dive into it a little bit. Content marketing. This is a very important strategy, tactic for organizations going forward, not just professional service firms. I mean, even back in the day when I had a real job some years ago, we used, I guess you'd call it, content marketing to stay out in front of those people that we might serve. But content marketing, this is important. Is it a challenge, though, to generate the content You know,
I mean, it can be. Every company has a great story. Every company has some kind of value that they serve to their customers. If you are a company about recruiting and staffing, well, you can create content that can be a live Q&A session on Periscope or Facebook Live where you're talking about new regulations like the new overtime law and what that's going to mean. It can be anything from an infographic that explains how your product works or a video. So again, it goes back to not creating content just for the sake of content. You want to make sure you're using the right tools. You want to understand what your customer, how your customer consumes content. Do they want videos? Do they want infographics? Do they just want a meme? You know, what is it that they want?
And you need to be liberal with it too, though, because I know, again, back in the day, sometimes I would find that practitioners in the professional services arena were concerned that they were giving away too much of their expertise.
Yeah.
You got to let that go now, don't you?
Absolutely. You have to let go not only of that, but also some of your brand control. You have to be willing to let customers play with your brand and engage with your brand and maybe even create fan art or whatever. But yeah, you have to give up some level of control, and definitely you got to show that secret sauce a little bit if you want to differentiate yourself from the competition.
Now, is some of your challenges, or maybe that's where some of the opportunity is not every client sees maybe some of the kind of gold they have, and then you can look at them and go, you guys have been doing this. If you do it in this way and then throw it on Periscope or throw it on Facebook Live, now we have something different. You know, they don't even know what they have. A lot of some of the assets in terms of content that they have just that they're just doing in their day-to-day life.
Oh, absolutely. We always have immersion sessions with our new clients where we really dive into what types of content, who are their subject matter experts, and what do they know? What can we pull out of them that will be of interest? So there is a lot of research and digging, and a lot of times clients don't even know.
And then just maybe repurposing something they're already doing in a different way, or taking it and slicing and dicing it and putting it in different channels.
Absolutely. So many of them have these great presentations that they
And they don't even think about that, hey, that's content.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's, you have to almost put on a content hat to kind of decide what is content that's applicable for everybody, or is it just something we have to keep internal?
Yeah, it's what I found is once you get clients to see, once you get that first
then all
win,
of a sudden,
that first click,
now they're like, whoa, look, I got this whole thing.
Yeah, then you're inundated.
two years ago, I did this whole presentation that's just sitting on a hard drive, and that's something that you might be able to utilize at least pieces of.
Yeah, and you can usually take one piece of content or information they have and turn it into a video, a podcast, an infographic. Turn one thing into 20, 30 different links, which brings me back to the other advantage of content, which is everything you put out there feeds through search. So if you really want to be found by your
and
customer.
More is better.
Yes, absolutely. You want to just own search and fill the search engines with your content so that you can be found.
And then when you have this kind of archive of content, you can kind of repurpose it when things are applicable.
Yes.
If some news happens,
exactly.
You can pull something from 3 years ago that is, might still be relevant today.
Absolutely. A lot of our strategies will develop what we call evergreen content. Mm-hmm. And that way we can kind of plug it in when we don't have something that is timely so that we always have that calendar full.
Now, is that something, is that kind of a best practice if somebody is working with a PR firm or even trying to do it themselves? Is to create some sort of an editorial calendar or look at kind of, don't look at today, like look at the quarter of the year.
Absolutely. We've been saying for years now, brands have to think of themselves as publishers now. And you want a theme. Again, it goes back to not doing it for the sake of doing it.
Right.
You want a theme. You want to make sure you have that value. When you're sharing content online, you also want to follow what's called the 80-20 rule. And this is where 80% of what you talk about or share is simply of value to your customer. 20% is about yourself. Because if you're just promoting and selling, nobody
cares. It's
too
pitchy and people tune you out.
Exactly.
Because it looks too self-serving.
Exactly.
So, you know, I was thinking about this Wall Street Journal comment that you had. but I think there's probably plenty of value in getting published in the Marietta Times.
Oh, absolutely.
If there's good content there, because maybe you're talking with a client or prospective client. The issue is relevant. It's germane. It's connected to whatever you're talking to them about. hey, here's an article where they interviewed us or whatever. So here's some more. It doesn't have to be.
But that's what the Wall Street Journal will find you, right?
Yeah, but that is true. News begets coverage, begets more coverage for sure. But it is about, again, going back to that target. What is your end goal? What is the problem you're trying to solve, the message you want to communicate, and making sure the messenger is the right one?
So outside of rule number one, which is simply pick up the phone, call Brandware, say, I want to talk to Jennifer, somebody on her team. If someone like Lee and I, who own a business, we don't do this very often. Often, I don't think we know what questions to ask. What counsel, if any, would you offer to folks like us if we're speaking with a potential PR firm that we might engage? What are some things that we definitely need to be asking them and thinking about and talking about before we make the decision to engage them? What would you ask?
Well, I would ask, again, going back to what problems do they need to solve, and let that conversation kind of emerge. So if I'm talking to you, in terms of what questions you ask, it's going to bounce back to what I've asked you. If you say your problem is how to differentiate between the competition, well, I'm going to ask you, what is your competition currently saying? How do people usually find you? All those types of questions.
Okay, so but if you're on my side of the table and you're considering engaging a PR firm, what should I be asking a PR firm? What should I be looking for? Are there some red flags maybe?
I'd look for, how good are they at storytelling?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I would probably ask for case studies. How have you done something like this before? Again, not necessarily category specific, but if I'm recommending a podcast program, I would want, if an agency, excuse me, on the other side is recommending podcast program, I would want to know, what other programs like that have you done? How have you done them? How have they been successful? Most importantly, how have they moved the needle? Whatever that goal is, how did it achieve that goal? I think the most important question you can ask goes back to metrics. How will you deliver that ROI? How will you actually prove the value of what you've done? Because it's not enough to get the brand awareness. It's not even enough to tell the story if that story doesn't move sales or drive new leads or solve whatever problem it is you're after.
But from a PR firm standpoint, what is an expectation that I can really attribute to PR? Can it be sales?
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm going to go, look, I'm going to hire you and our sales are X and I expect it to be X plus, 25%.
What we can
what's realistic?
Well, we can drive leads, we can drive clicks, that kind of thing. But the ultimate sale comes down to how good is your product.
Right. I mean, you can't control the sales guy, right? If he can't close anybody,
exactly. Although we can also test that sales process. We can do the secret shopper thing and find out where those breakdowns
where the holes are. Right.
But you don't duck this conversation. You have to be in complete agreement with the new client in what those success metrics are.
Exactly.
That's key, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Because you can't hit a goal if you don't know what it is,
Right.
And you have to build in those metrics at the upfront. So sometimes it's, let's say you're doing an influencer engagement and we recommend 20 different influencers. Well, we're going to give a unique URL, unique domain to each of those influencers so we can see how much of them drove traffic, which one of them was most successful and what that was specific
now,
to
that
each
is
of
one
them.
Thing about technology today. Boy, can you measure the heck out of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You need to measure the right stuff.
Exactly.
And sometimes we measure stuff that doesn't matter probably.
Yeah.
But that is, now that has changed, right?
Yeah. But even some of the old school techniques. I mean, if it's, let's go back to the Wall Street Journal. Let's say you get an article in the Wall Street Journal.
Remind me to build the Wall Street Journal.
Exactly.
I think they've had plenty of mentions on this broadcast.
But I would want to look at how many of that brand's key messages were in the article. Because a link is great. A link is fine. A mention of a company is valuable. There is value there. But more importantly, did the article say and communicate what we wanted it to communicate? That would be the metric there. So even if it's not clicks or leads that come in, it's how effectively was that story shared.
So now, as part of your, how about some free advice for some of our listeners? If you were putting together a PR plan for a small to mid-sized company, so the first, what are some of the basic building blocks of that?
Obviously, what we're talking about, know your goal. What is it that you want to
So get a clear
have?
Objective
yes,
of what it is.
Exactly.
So if it's leads or if it's just more brand awareness or, you have to identify, I guess, what are the right avenues? Because not every social media channel is appropriate for every
Absolutely.
Right, and that's kind of a a trap you can fall into because there's so many of them and you think, you know, oh, my spouse likes this one, so I better be on Pinterest.
Yeah.
You know? You know, that may not be relevant at all to the brand.
Absolutely. It's always more important to have a robust presence on one or two
in the right ones.
Yes.
And then maybe expand a little bit into the other ones, but focus primarily on a handful.
Exactly.
When you're starting.
Exactly. And know who your influencers are. Who is it that your customer is paying attention to?
So when you're saying influencers, could that be a human being, an individual, or it could be a brand, or like, how are you defining influencer?
Absolutely. It could be both. I think we're seeing a return, which I'm very happy about, a return to the real influencer. So much has been, oh, well, let's get that person on Instagram, that Instagram celebrity who has a million followers.
Right.
To tweet us or something or share something. Well, they may have a million followers, but they probably purchased most of them and they're not really going to actually follow a call to action. So I think we're seeing a return to the traditional reporter as an influencer.
Like a more authentic.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's changed. There was a time where a bigger number mattered.
Yeah.
Right. And then they were just chasing large numbers, where now you're saying that it's shifting to more authentic, true conversations with true influencers.
Absolutely. And more relevance to that specific topic.
He's fishing, Jennifer. He wants you to call him an influencer.
Or just brand. We'll hire brand.
There
influencer.
You go. There you go. That works.
But can you do that? Is that the next? Could I hire a firm? Is that a?
Absolutely.
So if a firm comes to you and say, we want to be influencers, you can help create a strategy around that?
Yes,
so
definitely.
That's a reason to hire a PR firm.
Absolutely.
That was a good setup by you.
It is, nice. But it really is. And that would actually be called a thought leadership program where we make you.
So you have an actual program for
this. Absolutely. And that is growing more and more.
Right.
We're really seeing more people needing to, again, differentiate themselves and rise above the clutter through thought leadership.
All right, so I have books on the brain, specifically business books, because we're going to this gig that we're doing right after the show, as a matter of fact, although I think we should slide by Alpha Soda and get some good country food first. At any rate, two questions regarding books. Do you think you might have a book in you? I mean, you just seem to really... You've just been there, done that.
That is part of Brandware's thought leadership program,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You think you might at some point?
I really do. You know, my career has been marked by key tipping points, and I think it is interesting to kind of follow that. As I mentioned earlier, I started out in the mid-90s. The internet was that key tipping point. We were running around telling everybody, yes, people really will buy things online, and you know, launched a lot of those dot-coms. 10 years later, it seems to happen every 10 years. 10 years later, Facebook opened up to the public. I was one of the first to start blogging and talking about social media, got to lead some of those first campaigns. Here we are 10 years later, and VR, AR, all of these new technological tipping points. So, yeah, I think there could be something there.
Good. I'm delighted to hear you say that. And second question, a little bit unfair, probably should have told you that we were going to ask this before we went on air, but I didn't know we were going to ask this, but I'm curious. Is there a book or two that is either on your nightstand now or that has influenced you in your thinking in this career that comes to mind for you?
Well, it's not so much a book, but Seth Godin's blog. Certainly Brian Solis, their blogs have always seemed to be very future forward.
Yeah.
And I pay attention to that for sure. And then other than that, social media today, I think, is such a great resource. It's an aggregate of social media bloggers. And it's usually a great resource just for inspiration alone.
Well, and that's really the more appropriate question this day and age. I'm kind of stuck in the old paradigm of a book, but that information, as we've explored, can come to us from so many different channels and platforms.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I have one question for you. Mm-hmm. If you were a young person getting into PR now, are there places you would recommend them? Are there organizations or groups that you would recommend them getting involved with?
I still think PRSA is a great one, and we have a fantastic chapter here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I also locally like AIMA, Atlanta Interactive Marketing Association. That's a great one. Other than that, I would say if you set up informationals, even if agencies or companies are not hiring at the moment, get on their radar. See if you can at least talk to them and learn more about them and introduce yourself.
And then I would think that in today's world, if you want to be hired by PR, it would be a good idea to maybe volunteer at a nonprofit, do PR and have examples, maybe blog. Right, to show your writing skills.
Yeah, I think blogging is still key, whether you do it through video or how whatever right. format it takes. I can tell you, I started blogging in 2007.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, way before it was cool. But I have not really had to interview for a job since then.
Right, because you publish all your work, right?
Right, right. My thought leadership and thought knowledge right. is out there. So, yeah.
Talk about eating your own cooking, huh?
Look yes. where she is now, president of our own agency.
All right, where can our listeners go to learn more, have a conversation with you or someone on your team, coordinates, website, email, whatever's appropriate?
Sure, brandwarepr.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Jonesy Jen.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Definitely.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
All right, pressure's on him. Patient. He can learn from all of Jennifer's mistakes, right?
Well, yes, I can. Absolutely.
I think he probably can. And, you know, he drove here from all the way from the other side of the tracks here, didn't he? Didn't you come up from Fayetteville?
I did. It's not the the end of the world, but you can see it from there. You can actually see.
That melodious, radio-friendly voice that you are hearing is from a gentleman with Meridian Realty, a Century 21 company. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Sean Saylor. What'd you learn in that last segment, man?
I learned a lot, actually, and I think Jennifer was spot on as far as some of her thoughts, and Lee touched on it as far as the client base now is very well informed. We are experiencing that in our industry. I'm going to back up before I go into that final explanations. I wanted to say thank you both to Lee and Stone for allowing me to be on the radio. I do appreciate it. I know it's a risk because every time
you have a crisis manager here.
I do.
How much of a risk could it be?
I need some drink. Well, because my team calls me, usually the phone conversation starts with Sean, we have you on the speakerphone. So I know when I'm supposed to behave, but I do appreciate it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity. But I did learn from Jennifer. I think she's right. A lot of the reasons why our industry is evolving the way it is for the same hot buttons that Jennifer touched on. And if you don't change in order to conform to the consumer, to who your client base is, then you're going to get run over. If you're standing in the street, you're going to get run over. And that's one reason why we had to make the change we did to a national, international.
Global. Right. So you started out that the reason you got on our radar was Century 21 National, the brand, contacted us and said that you had decided to join forces with them.
Yeah, we were one of the largest independent real estate brokerages in the south side of Atlanta. And we got there because we were doing the work that no one else wanted. We recognized that there's going to be a big change coming. And that big change was in distressed properties. We were all living large and having fun and really enjoying the real estate market. And then we started seeing more and more of the foreclosures.
Right.
Builders struggling.
Right. Before, everybody was a real estate agent. I mean, like, there was, right? Like,
right. Yeah, that's true.
Every tennis team had a real estate agent on them.
Absolutely. Right? You couldn't trade a dead cat without right? a real estate agent.
Because this was easy. You just, I'm a real estate agent, and then I'm going to get a handful, and maybe they were selling one
house
a year. You're
more like a waiter or waitress. You just simply take the order turned in. When right. it was ready, you turn it back to right. the customer, and you had money.
Right. So then we went through the downturn. And then all of a sudden, nobody was real estate anymore. It seemed like nobody was selling houses. It seemed like everybody was kind of staying put.
Well, they had all developed bad habits of wanting to eat every day. So they had to break that habit and go do something else. And but we saw a little bit ahead of time the need for the short sale. We had experienced that process.
And what is a short sale?
The short sale is simply where we would facilitate with the bank a payoff lower than the amount that's actually due. So you owed $100,000, but the market would actually only support about $90,000, and we would negotiate that price point with a buyer and then facilitate the short sale with the lender to where he would allow the release of the title for that property owner and save them from foreclosure, which was a pretty dramatic impact
right.
on their...
Right, you try to avoid that if you can.
If you can. It would follow you for years and years, and now employers look at your credit history and, well, right. you can't be responsible.
There's a lot of unintended consequences for that.
Yes, and so no one else really wanted to do that. No other brokerages really wanted to do that, and we got really, really good at it.
Now, did you come straight out of reform school right into real estate, or did you have a career prior to this?
No, right out of reform school, as a matter of fact. And the reform was not taking very well. And they thought, well, if we put you in the worst real estate market in U.S. history, that should change your attitude a little bit. And it sure did. It woke me right up. That was a good question, Stone.
But you've been at this.
You're so sweet to Jennifer, and I'm taking darts here. Hey, what did you think of Jennifer's comments? They're pretty good. Hey, how about your reform school days, Sean? How is that going for you?
We don't even publish the second half of the show, Sean. Okay. This is just for show.
I appreciate that. I was working with a large a company, TDK, and they approached me and said I was due for a promotion, and what do I think I'd be interested in doing? And I said, I need to think about it, and I'll get back with you. And I had decided there's nothing more I really see that I want. So when I came back and talked to them, instead of giving them an answer of my promotion, I gave a 2-week notice.
Wow.
That's gutsy.
That is that is a baller move.
If I do not see any future for me, then I decided I would kind of create my own future. That took some thought.
Choose yourself.
So I couldn't decide. Reform school wasn't doing it for me.
TDK
wasn't doing it for me. No one. And so I do remember there's a line in Alice in Wonderland. We all remember that book. Stone was just asking Jennifer, is there any books that stand out in your mind? Well, there's a line where Alice is wandering and she's on the road and she comes to a fork in the road and the Cheshire Cat appears and Alice says, which road do I take? And the cat says, where are you going? And Alice says, I don't know. So he says, well, then what difference does it make? That's how I was. After TDK made me that offer, I had to decide, well, where am I going before I can get on that road? Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. So then we started doing very well as an independent. We grew and grew and grew. And then we grew because we recognized there's a change in our industry. Now, years later, many national franchises were approaching me because we were a big, big influence. Now we're interesting to them. And were
before they wouldn't give you the time of day, right?
They thought I would die. There was a large national franchise, and we won't say their name.
What's it rhyme with?
Jennifer's seen that reporter trick before, right?
And they came to me and asked if I wanted to merge. And I thought, well, if you are asking me to merge, you never ask a weaker person to merge with you. You always want, so you must be the weaker person in this. And I said, no. And he said, well, what if I drive you out of business? And I said, I don't believe you can. Then a year later, we grew so much, they had closed their doors. And I grew so big that I took over their building. So I then took a picture of my sign on his building, and I forwarded it to him.
Ouch.
Yes, and that was the beginning of our great friendship.
Well, I can't imagine
true story
an arena more competitive than the real estate business. What's the secret, man? How have you been able to succeed? You're doing something different if you're winning that well, that consistently.
We are very, very good at speaking to our client base. The day of the real estate salesperson, in my opinion, is over. If Lee calls me out to list his house and I come out and I bring out my 7 pages of my market analysis and say, here's my information I got about the value of your home, Lee, who's already been to Zillow and Trulia and Redfin and Homes.com and Realtor.com, he pulls out his 437-page analysis, drops on the desk in front of me. The consumer knows as much about value on their property typically as we do because they're using our information. Our MLS system loads it and you can see it. So what Lee is really actually hoping for is to avoid losing money, help in negotiation or What happens in the case of repairs? I don't want to be in litigation over a bad contract. So Lee or Stone would be looking for someone of good value and ethic and knowledge to kind of guide me through and give me good counsel. So our role has shifted into being good counselors as opposed to salespeople. We used to control all of the information by getting a blue MLS book and flipping through it. And you said you want a house, and I'd point to two in the book. We go look at it. Now, very likely.
I already know the house.
Yeah.
Right?
You're going to call me and say, I found it online. Can I drop by and look at it? And the consumer, just like Jennifer said, I did learn something from you, Jennifer. The consumer has at their fingertips all the information that they need.
So you had a change as a company. As an industry, you really had to change, right?
I had to.
The value has to shift from just being the one with the information to now I'm saving you hassles, I'm saving you time, I'm making the transaction more efficient as opposed to if you were doing it yourself, right?
Absolutely. And in my life experience, people make decisions for only two reasons, desire for gain or fear of loss. So that's why most advertising is geared towards fear of loss.
Right.
Act now, be one of the first 10 callers, sale ends Monday, whatever. So the consumer, I believe, is more concerned about avoiding loss or his fear of loss. We have to address that and comfort them rather than information about value and market conditions and all that.
So then when you're discussing, like if you're working with somebody and saying, hey, look, I think my house should be $100,000, and you're like, well, you can sell it for $100,000, but it could take 2 years to get that, or you can sell it for $90,000 and we can sell it in, you know, 30 days. That's part of the counsel of you have been there, done that, right?
On, Lee, you're spot on. So we have a mantra we make the agents repeat before each meeting. It's on the back of their business card, and it says, the client's best interest always comes first. We will not bend the truth or compromise our ethics. So in real estate, you have time or money. And Lee, I have to find out from you what's important.
What's more important, right?
Yeah. So you say, Sean, I have a job waiting for me in LA, and
exactly.
It's a very important job.
I got to get out of here.
I got to be there on August 1st. Oh, good God.
So, get me the most as quick as you can.
So yeah, we have to now be aggressive on price. Or you say, you know, what I like to do is make plans to retire. I need every penny I can get. Okay, Lee, we can do it, but it may take a little bit more time.
Right.
So it's a balance. And I can find what you need. And we have a really good secret on finding out what the need of the client is.
And what is that?
We ask them.
Wow. That is a breakthrough. Idea. That's proprietary. You have a
it
proprietary.
Is. So we ask, where's your need at? So, and they are usually very quick to volunteer. they know that.
But it's one thing to have this mindset personally and to make the shifts that you've described as an individual, but you found yourself, you've got to generate results with and through the voluntary cooperation and effort of other people. You had to move an entire organization through these shifts. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure.
And were there some casualties maybe?
There were no casualties on our side once everyone clearly understood the value that was being presented. And you don't know the value until you understand where you currently are at. So Stone, whenever it's 1995, long week in the radio biz, you're driving home, two things probably you would do. You would swing by the Blockbuster and swing by Domino's Pizza, and that was your Friday night.
Right.
Jennifer's laughing because she did it too. So everybody did it. That was kind of part of your routine because Blockbuster was monstrous. One day Blockbuster gets a phone call. And this guy says, hey, can I rent 10 or 15 movies from you and then rent them to my friends and give them back to you? Sure, you can rent as many movies from us as you want, but you're responsible. Okay, I understand. A little while later, he says, I put up a website for my neighborhood. I got more folks who want them. Can I rent 50 at a time? Yeah, rent as many as you want to. As long as you pay for it and you're responsible, it's okay. Years go by. He's Netflix. He calls. He says, Blockbuster, would you like to buy Netflix for $10 million from us? Blockbuster says, no. Our clients will always want to come in person, talk to our sales staff. They enjoy browsing the shelves. They might ask, hey, what was that Tom Hanks movie with the Daryl and Mermaid? Splash. Yeah, Splash. Yeah, you have Splash. So Blockbuster declined, saying, no, our clients will not change. There is not a Blockbuster left open in the United States. We had to convince our agents that Century 21 provides all the tools that you're going to need for the big change that's coming in our industry, from a sales associate to now you're a consultant.
Right. Trusted advisor.
Trusted advisor. That's a very good phrase. Trusted advisor.
You can write
advisor.
That down.
Thank you, Lee.
Jennifer will bill you for that.
Yes.
Later.
Jennifer will bill me. Wall Street Journal, Jennifer. Right. There's a lot of billing happening.
A lot of invoices going
on. You have a cash cow coming out of this show right
now.
Here.
You see how this works.
I am quitting the real estate business. I see now my new path.
Now, you saw something or more than something that you really liked in Century 21. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
What spoke to me, every other brokerage that came and approached us said, Sean, if you'll fly our flag, this is what we'll do for you, whether it's financial or positioning or whatever. Century 21 came and said, Sean, this is what we can do for your agents. And that's when I stopped. And I know where my bread is buttered. And I said, I do want to sit down and talk to you for a few minutes. I know the value is.
So then you were aligned philosophically because you both want to take care of the agents.
Your culture matches my culture.
Right.
And my concern is if they are productive and happy and doing well, then my business will also be productive and doing well. So when they spoke the same language as me, it's kind of what is the love language, the book we guys understand.
Yeah.
You have to understand the other language. Well, that spoke to me. And then I had much more interest in listening to what they had to say. And this is no longer are we an island. We're getting a lot of business from China and from South America.
Wow.
And
because of their efforts.
That's right. Century 21 is in 76 countries, and my website.
Some of the people want to move here.
A lot of them want to invest here.
Yeah,
and we hear it. So we'll complain about how our government is and our complaints and what concerns us. And they'll stop me and they'll say, listen, the volatility in our country is much worse. You guys are much safer. We're bringing our money to you. But if you need to do business with the Chinese, what's the first thing you need to do?
Call Century 21.
Call Century 21. The second thing would be to speak Chinese.
Right.
If you're not able to communicate with them,
it's going
to
be a little challenging.
The answer is no. So our websites and our tools automatically translates into many languages. So when they pull up a house here in the U.S., it is in their language and also in their currency. So they know exactly how much they need to spend to invest here.
And that was one of the benefits of partnering with Century 21 is to have access to that technology. And
yes. When I was an independent in South Atlanta, our website only understood
Chinese.
Southern drawl. Yes. Y'all didn't translate the same way. And that's just harder to communicate. That's right. My Chinese was very poor at the time. But that was a deal maker for me is allowing the rest of the world to participate in our good market.
It's a big world, right?
It is a big world. And they're very interested in Atlanta, believe it or not. The Southeast region is getting attention everywhere. There's a lot of faith being placed in our ability to grow and prosper, and people will orient themselves and go towards those places of prosperity. And that's what I believe we're going to see in the next 18
months. So you're kind of bullish.
I am very bullish in this particular market. Other markets in the U.S. I'm very concerned about, but I feel very good right now about the Atlanta market.
Well, and you and your agents, obviously, you have to learn how to play very well with other people in your ecosystem. You got the appraisers, you got the mortgage brokers, you got the folks who can repair and remodel. There's a whole set of other providers in your world that you guys want to be in a position to refer us to Lee or you guys probably work pretty closely together, don't you?
That's a very good point. And there's a lot of fingers now involved in every transaction, a lot of fingers in the pie. And it used to be people viewed a real estate transaction like a boxing match. You'd have a winner and a loser, the best negotiator. You'd fight it out. But our approach is, Stone, with the buyer and the seller, this is more like a three-legged race. The two of you are going to be attached together from now until the finish line, which is the closing date, and we have to learn how to communicate and work in coordination with each other and cooperate. And then it's the same with our contractors. The contractors can either feed us or bleed us, and we know that. So we want good relationships. We need for them to have good results. If we all get in the boat and paddle the same direction, we will get there. But if we're all paddling different directions, we know it's going to be just a big mess and we'll have no progress. So we have.
Did you write that down? Feed us or bleed us?
Yes. Now you owe me.
Ryan. That's one water. You get one water for that.
My own one water is what I got for that. But you're right, Stone. We do rely heavily on them because your brother, who is a good Mason, you might mention him, you want a home, and he said, well, you know what? I've had very good luck with Sean Saylor. He's a good guy, and he's helped me, and I watched how he's taking care of his clients. Call Sean, because that personal referral, you maybe won't even shop around for another agent once someone personally says,
that's right,
please go to them because they did a really good job for us.
Now, your sweet spot in Fayetteville, is that your primary area that you work?
We hit about I-20 South. We have intentionally recruited and found agents that work all the communities, I-20 South, and we can cover a lot of ground that way. And our knowledge, and because we've been around for doing real estate for 20 years, we have enough influence and contacts in each of those communities to where we can be successful and do very well. And all of our systems kind of talk to each other anyway anymore. You know, the George MLS and the key card systems and all that, they're all very compatible. We all use the same contracts.
Right.
What you just need is boots on the ground for someone who can
and
say...
And that's what you have.
We have boots on the ground.
All right. So if somebody wants to learn more...
They can call us directly at 770-719-9150. I personally like if they'll visit us on Facebook because I do watch it every day. I will respond. And Facebook is more an opportunity to engage than just going to my website. You might ask me a particular question and you will hear back from us. So if you go to the Century 21 Meridian Realty Facebook page, you'll get a flavor for our culture. You'll see our agents and their comments and how their attitudes are towards their clients and the public. And I think you'll get a much better feeling about who we are if you'll go to our Facebook page versus our website. Website's kind of cold.
And then that's where they can see that you're handsome and charming?
They should. They absolutely should be that. And we can make a vote and see. But I put that on my bio thinking this is a radio show and I'll get by not knowing you're going to take photos. So I should have given that more thought, but it's there now.
Live and learn,
it's
right?
Live and learn.
That's media training question. For other people.
Yes. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Lee, and thank you, Stone, for your time.
Oh, it's been an absolute blast. Thank you to you both. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our two guests this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.